Thank you, microdose.com. That's all I have to say right now. I have been traveling so much, planes, cars, like long, long drives. My body hurts, you know, sleeping in different beds, in different hotels, you know, everything's kind of screwy. And thank you, microdose.com. I know you've heard the word microdose before, but this is microdosing THC. And microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And you deserve to feel good. You can go to their website, microdose.com, and learn all about microdosing THC. But I'm telling you, it is amazing. They have all different strains that help with all different issues. A friend of mine just sent me a photo of her with her order from microdose.com saying thank you. I'm telling you, a lot of people do this, all sorts of people. And they do it to feel healthier. They do it to perform better. They do it to focus. They do it to sleep. They do it for pain. They do it for relaxation. It really helps your mind and body be at peace. So really check it out. Microdose.com is amazing. And the product, they taste delicious, number one. But the product is so damn good. And you deserve to feel better. So what are you going to do? You're going to go to microdose.com. If you don't already know, you're going to learn about microdosing THC. And when you get there, you're going to get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Promo code Judy Gold. It is available nationwide. That is microdose.com, promo code Judy Gold, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, for 30% off and free shipping. That is a lot, 30% off. And the stuff is amazing. I'm telling you, microdose.com, promo code Judy Gold. You're welcome.
Well, I don't see the point in waiting any longer. Let's bring her out. The star attraction, the one you came to see. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Ms. Judy Gold.
Ladies and gentlemen, I can't even believe this person is in the studio. Yeah, I can't. Like, you know, I get a lot of comics and I get some real, I mean, you're going to die when you hear who's here today. You're going to literally, I hope you're not driving, but guess who my guest is today, even though it probably says it on the podcast thing, right? It says it on the description. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Daly is here. Tim fucking Daly. Tim Daly. Tim fucking Daly, ladies and gentlemen. Woo!
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Tim, I can't, I mean, like, you're like a huge star.
Not really.
Yes, you are.
No, you know, I like to say that I've made a face for myself.
Oh, shut up.
It's true. People look at me, they go, oh, you're the guy. Aren't you the guy? They don't know my name, but they know
right,
me.
They're like, oh, I know you. Wait, so I get people that do like, did we go to high school? Like they look at you like I know you, but I don't know where to put you.
I do that too. I do that with athletes and like
you
celebrity chefs. I was like, did we go to high school together? Where? How do I? We met at something, right?
Right. And then they're like, you know, I wrote the cookbook, j'aime un offer.
Right. That's the French, I guess.
Yeah. I was trying. It was kind of French and Israeli. Tim.
Judy.
First of all, I love you. You're like an amazing person.
Oh, thank you. I love you too.
Oh, thank you. And we see each other at the gym.
Your audience should know that I see you at the gym, and your audience should know that Judy Gold is a savage. She's a savage at the gym.
I get into my working.
She does not fool around.
Right.
She's the real thing.
Right. Well, you are too, except we both get really, we can say this at the end because it's kill me now and I'm going to ask you what pisses you off, but Tim and I bonded over the fact that these fucking assholes pick up these like 500 pound weights. They're like, and then they drop them on the fucking floor. Like, why do you have to fucking drop them on the floor?
What is that? Like, oh no, don't notice me over here dropping a 500 pound weight. And everybody thinks they die for cover. They think it's a terrorist attack. It's terrible.
It's horrible.
New York City. It's like a bomb going.
I know.
On.
I can't stand it. I cannot fucking stand it. Anyway, Tim, you. This is the Jew bell, by the way. Anything remotely Jewish gets a ring, okay?
Oh, okay.
Because I'm a Jew. You have had a very interesting life.
I have had an interesting life.
Yeah, very. Like, that people wouldn't know by looking at you. Like, they probably think, oh, you know, he had a perfect childhood and, you know, then went to a great school and then got his first acting role. But no, that's not how it happened.
No, it's I seem calm.
Right.
Even though inside me, there's a white hot burning sun of anxiety. And
really?
Stress. And I look kind of organized. I have this organized looking face. So people assume things. When people write my biography, they're inevitably wrong. Which I sort of
really.
Love.
So you have anxiety. You know, I suffer from anxiety as well.
How come you're not ringing the Jew bell? Isn't that part of it?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. That's right. Really? You have anxiety?
Hells yeah.
You know what? All right. I did a lot of research on you.
And I'm sweating because I drank water and it made just.
Oh, no. And it's so fucking hot in here. So you were born in Manhattan at Mount Sinai Hospital.
That's correct.
Yes.
Correctamundo.
And both of your parents, actors.
Correct.
Although your mother, God rest her soul, gave it up to bring up her four beautiful children.
Correct.
Now, you are the youngest of four, and you have three older sisters.
That's right.
8, 10, and 13 years older than you.
You know exactly everything about me.
I do.
I'm getting a little scared.
You can ask Laura. I just, you know, I love learning about people. So what do you think you were, either A, mistake, or B, the marriage saver?
I was the marriage saver.
Right.
And I failed.
Right.
At my job. Does
any marriage saver child work?
No, it's the worst idea
ever. Let's have another kid. Like, now that I'm a parent, the thought of, like, let's have another kid to say, it's like, no, that's more fucking stress. Like, why do you want another kid?
Now that things suck and our marriage is hanging by a thread, let's put a huge stress on it and have another kid that we can torture.
And then we can be mean to the kid because we hate each other.
Isn't it great?
It's great. You know what my ex used to do? When the kids were young and like little babyish babies, and instead of telling me, can you do this? I'm going to take a nap. She would, as she was feeding them, she'd be like, "Mommy's going to take you to the park, and then she's going to take you out for ice cream, and then I'm going to go get a mani-pedi." And that's how she used to tell me what
your day was going
to
be like.
Yeah. Like, I was taking them to the park while she got a mani-pedi. That's how she did it, while she was feeding them.
I think she gets an award for passive aggression.
Really? Right there.
That is really professional.
And it was bad because I remember specifically when Henry was a little, months old, I was training for the marathon, and I would come home from and I'd come home from like a 15 mile run. "Mommy's gonna take you to the children's museum, and I'm gonna go get a massage, and then she's gonna," and I was like, "Fuck you! I have to sleep. I just ran 15 miles."
You know what I call that?
What?
I call that an asshole trap.
That is an asshole trap.
People are really good at this, but that's like, if you say to your kid, "No, mommy's not gonna do that, then you're an asshole.
Right, right.
So you're trapped into doing something that you don't want to do.
Right, right.
It's kind of like that thing where you say to someone, you want to talk to them about something that they've done that you're upset with. And you say, "Listen, we really have to talk because I'm upset about something." They say, "That's fine. I totally understand. And my second cousin twice removed just got in an accident."
Right.
"And they're clinging to life."
Right.
And so then if you go on to talk about the thing you're upset about,
you're
an asshole because you didn't say, "Oh, God, I'm so sorry about your cousin twice removed who had So you're trapped into not being able to talk about what you want to talk about.
What about when you say to someone, this is another thing, fuck, all right, you're like, "Oh, I really need to talk to you about something. Is there a time we can meet?" And they're like, "Well, what is it?" "Well, I'd like to do it in person." "Well, can't you just tell me a little bit?" "No, I really think we should talk." "Oh, come on. And then you end up sucked in and say it on the phone and it sucks.
Right. That's true.
Okay, great.
I'm thinking about something my mother used to do, which was really expert. She called and got my answering machine or my voicemail, she would say, "Timmy, honey, something unspeakable has happened. It's just tragic and I can't tell you about it. Goodbye."
No way.
Yes. I mean, you should ring the bell, even though she wasn't Jewish at all.
But that was pretty really bad. Good. Did you ever? Oh, you never saw my bit about.
It was her way of getting me to call her back immediately.
And was there ever a tragic thing?
Well, depending on your point of view.
Right.
Like sometimes there's something in the
bird
news.
Bird got, like, you know. I used to play an answering machine message. My mother left me at in the. How long? I mean, years and years ago. People still ask for it of her. We got disconnected and she thinks that I'm dead in the apartment and is screaming, you know, where are you? I'm a wreck. I'm going to call the neighbor. Let's go. And then at the end, she goes, so long. I mean, it's the funniest thing in the world. It's like literal.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Anyway, so you're born in Manhattan. You have three older sisters, one of whom is Tyne Daly, which when I found that out, I was like, I can't believe they're brother and sister. You're so different. Don't you think?
That's what people say, but she's
now,
my sister.
I know. I love her. I love her.
Yeah, I do too.
She's the best. I did an episode of Murphy Brown and she went outside and had a cigarette and I talked to her because I just wanted to be near her. All right. So
I can't talk to her. She's not smoking, but there you go.
Why is she smoking cigarettes?
She's an idiot.
Okay. So your father, he was in the theater. Mm-hmm. He was a working actor. Mm-hmm. You described it as like in those days he would get up, he'd put on a suit, he'd go into the city, go on auditions. Like, remember when people would actually dress up to like take a train or a plane or go to the theater?
I do remember that.
I don't. What happened? I mean, not. I know I look like a slob right now, but I'm just saying, like when I watch the Grammys sometimes, I'm like, what the fuck are you wearing? Like ripped black jeans and some tank top. Like, what is that?
I don't know. I guess we got really comfortable, but maybe we should be just a little less comfortable.
Bit. Yeah. I mean, you look at old footage of like baseball games, suits,
hats.
Hats.
I mean, I went to this really nice restaurant a few weeks ago and there's a guy in there wearing like a Derek Jeter, you know, jersey. I'm like, I like Derek Jeter, but come on.
Yeah.
I mean,
what restaurant?
No, I'm not telling.
Really expensive.
It was pretty expensive.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can do it. Well, at least you have the money. That was my mother. Okay, so. All right. So your father, James Daly, you used to go with him when he was doing theater and hang out with like, you know, you were like a kid running wild behind the scenes.
In summer stock.
Yeah.
Now, the thing you have to understand about this is that it was before suing. Right. It was before everybody sued.
Right.
So I could climb the ladder and run around in the fly loft and peek down and be up in the, you know, the catwalk and all that stuff. And no one thought anything of it. Sneak around backstage and peek out from behind the curtain. And it was awesome. It was like this huge jungle gym or playground.
Right.
And I loved it.
Well, now forget it. You know.
No, now you can't.
You can't do anything. I mean, we didn't have helmets. We didn't have anything. And we seemed to survive. But you'd think that that would make you want to be, or that might take the magic out of theater by seeing how everything works. But instead, it had the opposite effect.
Effect because I was in on the trick.
Right.
I mean, one of the things that that makes me we can talk about this later. One thing that pisses me off now is the making of everything. It's like every time
see
a show, they right after the episode, they let you
stay
in
tuned
on the,
for
on,
a little. Yeah,
on the magic
behind
of
the scenes of
I
the.
I don't
want
to know.
Right.
I don't want to know who's sleeping with who. I don't want to know what the special effects are. I just want to be
lost
in the story.
There's no imagination anymore.
There you go.
And it's a big problem. I've talked about that before, and the fact that no one's ever bored, and so that no one creates new things. You know, boredom feeds like, oh, let me think of something to do.
I don't even call it boredom. I just think that it's, you know, that phrase, letting your mind wander.
Right.
Your mind can't wander anymore.
No.
Sometimes if your mind wanders, it goes into like a really interesting neighborhood.
Right.
And you're like, oh, look at this. I've never been to this neighborhood. And,
right.
And you think of something new.
Right.
But if you're constantly guided by music and videos and blah, 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 then you don't have a second for your mind to go where it wants.
I think it's going to go back. Don't you? I think we're going to get to a time where people are like, oh, it's so not cool.
If I become king, it'll go back really quickly.
I can't take it. All right. So
it'll be a bloody rain, but it'll be so much better when I'm done.
Oh, I can't wait.
Will you vote for me for king?
Yes.
Okay.
You'll be a handsome king. Hey, everybody. If you know me, you know I love my liquid IV, and I love giving it to people and telling people about it, and it's part of my everyday life. I keep hydrated with liquid IV. I put it in my water bottle. Well, I have this one water bottle that I use only for liquid IV, and I put lots of ice in it and cold water because I like it very cold. And it keeps me hydrated and it's delicious. So thank you, Liquid IV. And I have to tell you, I've now given it to my son's girlfriend because, you know, they go out partying. You know what I'm talking about. And it has helped her immensely with her dehydration, that it's great for those nights where you know you're going to be having a few drinks. It's delicious. It comes in pear, white peach, grape, lemon lime. Also, there's a lemon ginger one that is great that has a little caffeine. I just love Liquid IV. And you need to keep hydrated. It's very important. It affects you on so many levels. So do yourself a favor. Keep hydrated in the best way possible. Some people hydrate to live. Some people live to hydrate. I think I live to hydrate. Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. It has 3 times the electrolytes of leading sports drinks, 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness. And this is true. They have a sugar-free stick. They have Liquid IV sugar-free that Elisa, my lova, loves. I don't use the sugar-free. Whatever. But it's also been great for my traveling because I get very dehydrated on my airplane flights. So please, you've heard me say this multiple times. Go get your Liquid IV. You have to keep hydrated. It's very important. So however you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, at liquidiv.com. You're welcome. So your father was Chad Everett's boss on Medical Center.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I loved that show.
I never watched it.
What? I loved medical. Well, because you're not a Jew. But, and you know, anything medical. But did you ever go on the set with him or anything?
I did.
No way.
I did, yeah.
And?
Well, it was back in the day, you know. What I remember most about it was that it was really hot.
Right.
Like, back in the day, they had these enormous lights.
Yeah.
And my father was, like me, as you know from seeing me at the gym, was a sweater.
Right.
So he was constantly being mopped off
right.
and drenching in sweat. And Chad Everett was quite a piece of work.
Really?
Yes. Oh, yes. He was, he used to, as I recall, he's still alive, right? So he's not going to listen.
Is he?
Anyway, he used to.
He's, I guarantee you he's not listening.
He used to count the words that he had.
No way.
Yes. And insist on a certain percentage of the words. So he had a healthy ego, let's put it that way.
But that's so like, there's no small parts. There's only small actors. He's the example of.
Yeah, but he had a huge part.
I know, but who the fuck?
You're right. Whatever that explanation was.
Yes,
right.
Thank you. I mean, that's upsetting because he was hot.
He was hot.
Yeah. What's he? So do we know if he's alive? Oh, he died. He died in 2012. He's definitely not listening to this episode.
I feel bad that I said that now.
Who fucking cares?
Okay. All right.
No one cares. He's dead. So, your father was the face of Camel, right?
Camel cigarettes.
Camels. Did he smoke Camel cigarettes?
Yeah, back when cigarettes were good for you.
Yeah.
More doctors smoke Camel than any other
Right,
brand.
Right. And he was the
spokesperson.
Did you see him on billboards and stuff?
I don't remember billboards, but I remember this slogan. The slogan was, have a real cigarette.
Right.
Have a Camel.
Have a Camel without the filter and then get cancer and drop dead. Take care. Yeah. So, your sisters at this point, since they're older than you, are you like hanging out? Are they gone? Are they in college or wherever?
They're gone. I mean, I have some vague memories of them, but you know, by the time I'm five, What Tyne is, you know, she's 15. I mean, I remember Tyne being around. My eldest sister, I hardly remember.
Right.
Because she went
was
to boarding
13.
School at
yeah.
16. And so right. I was, what, 3.
Right. So
my youngest sister, Glenn, I remember pretty well. But when my parents got divorced, when my dad left when I was like 8.
Right.
That was very traumatic for me.
So but up until that time, idyllic yes. childhood.
You know, sort of.
Right.
I mean, it's funny because anyone that has siblings knows that you get different parents, even though you have the same
right,
parents.
Right, exactly.
Different parents.
Right.
And I got the very best of my dad and the very worst of my mom.
Right.
And it was just a matter of timing and other stuff. But I relied on my dad a lot.
Do you think it was because you were a boy that you got the best of him, or?
I mean, I think partially that, right. but partially because, you know, he had gotten to be a kind of a better parent and
right.
more sort of into it as time
right.
went on.
Right. So, and your mother was obviously unhappy. Your father was gay. And, but did she knew, right, when they got divorced?
Oh, yes, she knew. I mean, you know, she knew for a long time, but you have to understand that this was an era where,
oh, please, yeah.
you know, where everybody knew, right? This wasn't like people were deluding themselves.
Right.
Everyone knew. The church knew, the doctors knew, the
right.
psychiatrists knew, society knew that if you were gay, you were sick.
Right.
And you had to get over your sickness. So
right.
my parents together, because they did love each other,
mm-hmm.
dealt with my father's, and I'm making quotation marks, his sickness
right.
of homosexuality. So my dad, you know, did, I mean, and he was obviously on some sort of sexual spectrum.
Right.
But as we all are, and he worked very hard to overcome this this illness that he
mm-hmm.
had, and it just didn't work because it's not an illness, so you can't cure something that is not an illness.
It's fascinating,
and you know, and my mother was devastated by it because she, as many women did, and men probably too in that era, blamed herself
right, right.
if she had loved better or more
but,
or something
yeah.
said something. She blamed herself and
right.
caused a lot of problems.
I, you know, when I read about that period of time and, you know, all the people that were so closeted, I mean, you know, thank God I'm alive now, but I remember being in the closet, you know, when I was a little girl, when I figured out what was quote unquote wrong with me, mm-hmm. it was like, I was like, oh my God, no one can ever find, like it was, you think that your life is over if anyone finds out. And now, I mean, thank God, I mean, your father would be a different man if he was living right now.
He would. I mean, the sad part was that even after he was unable to,
right.
you know, be something that he wasn't, he never forgave himself, you know, because that was so ingrained in him.
Right.
Having grown up Catholic, especially,
right.
that he was bad. He was evil. You know, he was wrong.
Right.
And I remember very vividly. I think I was 19 when he finally told me, and he handed me this letter, and I read it, and as I was reading, I looked over and he was weeping, and it
aww.
Said, I wish this weren't true. My life would be so much better and easier if it weren't. But the fact is I'm a homosexual. And I thought, oh my God, this poor man,
right.
you know, even though he's now, you know, at least, I mean, not out, but at least not living
right.
as a heterosexual.
Right.
He still can't forgive himself. He still, you know, wishes that it weren't so.
Right. But when you were a kid, I know you've talked about how you had actors were always over your house because
mm-hmm.
of your parents. Famous ones?
Yeah.
And there was a lot of partying and, you know, I heard you say, and this made me feel terrible, you know, we used to eat dinner, you know, at 10:30 at night. And, you know, that's sort of me because I'd go do a set. I'd be like, do you want to eat before? No, I'll do my homework. Then I get home and then we'd eat dinner at like 9:30. And, you know, I felt bad for my kids, but at least we had the time together. But, you know, do you think there were other homosexuals that were at the house? I mean, they all knew about your father?
Well, I mean, listen, there was sort of a, you know, I mean, this was the theater, the
right.
theatrical community. So obviously there are
right.
gay people. And,
right.
And
it's disgusting.
I think, and you know, I think there was an understanding between them.
Right.
Some people were more comfortable with being out than others, even though it might have, you know, endangered them or their careers. And there were a lot of people who were, you know, seriously on the down low.
Oh, yeah.
And honestly, as a kid, I wasn't aware of it at all.
Right.
I had no idea what it even was. And by the time I did, it was, you know, I was told by my culture at that time, it was like, ew.
Right.
Gross.
Right.
You know? And that's all I knew about it.
Did your father tell your sisters at the same time he told you? Was it a group?
No, it was a weird thing because everybody knew way before. It was like 10, when my parents were divorced, I think everybody knew by then.
That was like 1965.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they all colluded, my mother, my father, and my sisters, not to tell me.
Wow. Because that's so youngest. My family used to do that to me, too, because I'm the youngest.
Yeah. They wanted to protect me from something.
And then you feel like,
well, this is the thing. They thought, and this, again, I can't be angry at them because they thought they were doing the right thing. Even my dad thought he was doing the right thing.
Right.
Because everybody knew how much I loved my dad and what a great relationship I had with him.
Right.
And they didn't want this... They didn't want me to get infected
by
this bacteria or whatever
that,
you know, or swayed into this thing because there was, you know, again, there was this idea that you could, you know, make someone
gay
with your crazy lifestyle or whatever that is that some people still think is a real
Mike
thing.
Pence.
Oh, God.
I can't stand him. So he sort of... He kept a distance after. Was it after he came out that he kept a distance, or was it
after my parents were divorced?
Right.
They also decided that it was a good idea to keep my exposure to him.
Ugh, it's so awful.
It was awful, and my dad was.
He was probably the best father in the world. Like I.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
I'm just saying must have been more fun than a lot of other.
I had a good relationship.
Right.
And there was no reason why I couldn't have spent a lot more time with them. But it was like 2 weeks a year until...
No way.
Yeah, until I quit college when I was 18. And I went out to L.A. and I guess I was 19 or something. And that's when he finally told me. And it was like...
So they got divorced and you went from seeing him every day to seeing him 2 weeks a year.
Yeah.
That's fucking horrible. Did you go to therapy?
Not at that moment.
Right.
No, nobody.
Oh, that is so sad.
Yeah, it was sad. I mean, it was sad because I missed all that time.
Of course. And did you write or did you, you know, because people used to write letters.
We talked on the phone.
Was he close by?
No, he was in L.A. and I was in New York.
Okay. Terrible.
Yeah, it was terrible. And I would go and visit him, you know, and still, I mean, he had boyfriends who he was living with.
Did you know it then?
No. I mean, you know, I would show up and the boyfriend would.
Leave.
Go to the other bedroom.
Oh,
his roommate.
Like right. Roommate, yeah.
You know, and I was like, that made sense to me.
Right.
You know, as a 10-year-old.
Right. Of course.
You know, my dad's boyfriends at the time were not flamboyant or anything
that.
They were just guys. It was the last thing in
my
mind.
That's amazing.
But when he told me, like the moment he told me. And this is an analogy I've used a lot, but it's as if my life was an enormous jigsaw puzzle with one piece missing. And I was so close to the puzzle that all I could see was the outline of the missing piece. And as soon as the piece went in, the entire puzzle
made sense. Yeah.
It's like I stepped back. I had this new perspective.
Right.
And whoa, there it all was. And oh, that's what mom was talking about. Oh, this is his roommate was, you know, just all this stuff came flooding in on me. So
did you... Who'd you call first after you found out?
Oh, I didn't call anybody.
You didn't?
No.
You didn't say, I can't fucking, but like you didn't call Tyne or anyways. How could you not tell me this?
No. I mean, you know, I had my own problems at that point. And I think I talked to my friends and, you know, for me, given my orientation in the world and my age, I was like, does that mean I'm gay? I mean, I had the same same thing. And so I was asking myself, like, what does this mean?
Right.
You know, this man that I love so much, who was my great dad for, you know, 8 years. So it was a process.
I mean, and then you think of like Leonard Bernstein and Neil Sedaka, like all these people. Oh, I had to get reminded for the Jew Bell. I'm so into this conversation. But yeah, I mean, think of all those, Aaron Copland. I mean, all these people who couldn't live their lives. Well, at least he had you. Hey, everyone, I have a new sponsor, and I love them. They're called OneSkin. OneSkin. And what is OneSkin? It is skincare. Skincare that is simple. I guess that's the perfect word. It's simple. It you don't have to put on 18,000 products while you're like dying to get in bed. OneSkin was founded by four PhDs dedicated to skin longevity. And this stuff proves you don't need a complicated routine to achieve better skin. Their supplements, they're topical, and they make it easy to help your skin stay younger and healthier without putting all that other shit, I said shit, on your face. And the secret of OneSkin is their OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient scientifically proven to reduce the buildup of senescent, did you like that? Senescent cells, those little cells that contribute to skin aging. And the fewer amount of cells that they're called zombie cells, that means healthier, younger looking skin, fewer wrinkles, fewer lines, reduced age spots, natural barrier. And that is very important, especially now it's spring and summer and you're going to be out in the sun. So, you know, you love your skin, so do something for it. Return it the favor of having skin and treat it nicely. Does that make sense? Well, so I'm very excited about OneSkin and I haven't gotten my product yet, but I am really, really, really looking forward. So I'm going to be giving you an update on my skin, but you should do it with me. For a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15% off their first OneSkin purchase using the code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, when you check out at oneskin.co. That's oneskin.co, and it's oneskin.co. You really, really need to invest in your skin. It's very important. So OneSkin, you're going to do this today. You're going to go to oneskin.co. It is more than skincare. It's about skin longevity, targeting the root causes of aging to help you look and feel your best at every age. Get started today with 15% off using code JUDYGOLD at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code JUDYGOLD. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. It's time to expect more from your skincare routine. Invest in the health of your skin with OneSkin. You're welcome. You went to boarding school,
too. I did. I went to boarding school.
And then you go to Syracuse University for like 5 minutes.
10 days or something.
All right. And because is it they said you couldn't audition or something?
They said that I could not perform for 2 years. Like my junior year, I could start auditioning to perform. And they had changed over the summer. They had changed their curriculum, which I didn't know.
Right.
They didn't like send
like
me
you
a note.
Apply before. Yeah. They changed.
It was a wrong place for me anyway.
Right.
But yeah, so I basically got there my second day. They said I wouldn't be performing for 2 years. And it was a number of days of me freaking out, trying to figure out how to get out of there.
Right. But you didn't tell your parents.
No.
But you got out and you got your father's his money back.
I got money back.
That's good.
I know.
Did your sisters go to college?
Tyne went to Brandeis.
Mm, that's.
And flunked out.
I'm trying to undo the bell. All right. Yeah.
She flunked out because she was just like sleeping with this guy and
right.
just spending all the time in the theater. And
right.
Not doing anything else.
Right. Right.
And my sister Pegine went to Bennington College
mm-hmm.
and did not graduate.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister Glenn did not go to college.
Wow! And yeah. what do they do? Glenn.
Glenn is probably the most talented person in my family.
No way.
She can sing like a freaking
right.
bird. She's an artist and such a creative person.
Right.
And her personality is such that you know, it's hard. Like we've been saying, my sister makes the most beautiful homes I've ever seen.
Right.
And we keep saying to her, why don't you do this? Why don't you make homes and flip them?
Right. Make a show. Yeah.
But what we know is that if someone came and said, I love everything about this, but could we maybe change the color of the curtains? She would be like, oh, God damn, you hate me. Fuck it. No, fuck it. I'm out of here. She just can't.
Right. She would be a terrible comic.
Yeah. The rejection thing, she doesn't do too well.
Right.
My sister Peggy was, she was actually an executive at the Avon Company.
No way. Ding dong.
Which was one of the only corporations in the United States that had a woman CEO who was kind of promoting women to be executives. And she did something kind of crazy, which was she got married and quit because she was going to be
a
someone's
mommy.
Wife.
Right.
And she was a mommy. She was a great mom. And she has had several other careers since she worked.
Oh, that's good.
As my sister's time stand-in for Judging Amy.
Wow.
And she worked in the Boston at a museum in Boston. Right. I don't know exactly what this. Tyne is an actress.
Oh, I've heard of her. Yeah. So you went away to board. So boarding school is not like going to high school, like public high school.
No,
because my son's now at boarding school. Yeah. It's a whole different.
It's weird. It's a weird thing.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
How come you went away?
Because I needed to save my life.
Okay.
I mean,
a lot of people go for that reason, or like then there's those families that are like, oh, of course they're going to boarding school. We all go to boarding school. And then, you know, my son just plays basketball, so we had it.
Yeah. Right. So there's that. But no, when my dad left, my mom was already sick, but she got very, very, very sick. And it was bad for me at home. My sister Glenn was there for a couple of years, but then she escaped.
She was drinking.
Yeah. And it was not safe for me.
Right.
And my eldest sister and her husband stepped in and they kind of said, okay, we need to get this kid out of here.
Bad.
So I went to the Putney School in Putney, Vermont.
Very nice.
Yes. Well, it sounds very nice.
Yes.
It's kind of a hippie. It's kind of a hippie.
Oh, it is?
Oh, God. It's a hippie, you know, like farm school.
Right.
It's a great place. Not a great basketball school.
Right.
And it sort of saved my bacon, you know, to be in this place with kids and not in that environment.
Right. Thank God.
Thank God.
So you leave Syracuse and then, oh, by the way, I wanted to mention that your grandmother, Dorothy, by the way, I had a grandmother, Dorothy, too.
Really?
Worked for the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
The fuck?
I know.
What did she do?
Well, she was, you know, what they used to call a secretary. I don't think she did anything.
Oh,
I mean, she had security clearance, but she wasn't, you know, hiding in.
Oh, she had security clearance.
Yeah, but she wasn't.
You know, did Jared?
She wasn't packing.
Right. Oh, okay.
You know, she wasn't packing any heat or, you know, meeting any Russians.
Do you think she knew anything?
She wasn't colluding with any Russians, let's put it that way.
Well, that's unusual. You go.
You go. This is your life. You're going through every last.
I love this. So you leave Syracuse. You go to L.A. and you started a flooring company.
Floor tiling. Yeah.
Yeah. Floor tiling, which you learned from a bunch of Mexican guys.
I was working as a laborer for this master carpenter who was.
But you knew you wanted to be an actor.
No, I didn't know anything.
Oh, you didn't?
I didn't know. I could not find my ass with both hands.
But you went to Syracuse thinking you were going to be in the acting program.
That was the only thing I thought I could do. I mean, I figured out in high school that it was something that I could do.
Right.
It was something I had an aptitude for.
Right.
But I didn't know if I had the wherewithal, the personality, like my sister, to go out there and have people say, you suck.
Right.
You're too short. You're too fat. You're too pretty. You're too whatever you are.
Right.
And
actually, no one had to say any of those things to you. Anyway, so because you're so good looking,
Well,
whatever.
Whatever.
But it's also like most kids, they want to go in the acting program, and their parents are like, you are not going in the act. You can minor in acting. So, but your parents were actors, so they like were into it, correct?
Not really. Right.
Well,
I mean, because the thing, they know what they're in for. You know, they, I mean, listen, my parents were great in that they wanted me to do something I was passionate about, but I wasn't passionate really about anything yet.
Did your mother ever act again after?
She did a few times.
So that's good.
She was really good too.
I bet.
Yeah, she was really good.
So I'm
working as a laborer for this guy, and I'm working with these Mexican guys who are the most incredible craftsmen I've ever seen.
Oh, I bet.
And they teach me how to do tiling. And so I got sent down to Mexico with this buddy of mine, and we were picking up this tile from this guy named El Primo. And El Primo loved my friend because he spoke fluent Spanish.
Right,
we were a
right.
couple of hippies. And anyway, he had a deal with the border guards, and he delivered us like 30,000
square. I'm sorry, I have Trump on the phone. Hold on, please. Okay.
Back in the day. Yeah, I have a passport. I'm legal.
Yeah.
But anyway, so he delivered us all this tile to LA, and anyway, it's a long story. So we started a floor tiling company.
And it was called Silver Dollar.
The Silver Dollar.
And you would put one silver dollar in a corner, like when you put the, and so
yeah. Like trademark registered.
Right. And how many think do you think there's still places that have the silver dollar in the corner?
I have no idea. But wouldn't that be cool?
That would be so fucking all right. If any of my listeners look on your floors in LA, if there's a silver dollar, was it exposed?
Yeah.
That's
we didn't
so
hide
cute.
It.
I know, but you didn't put it in the middle of the floor. You put it like in a corner.
Yeah, on the side.
Whatever. And then you were a carpenter and you came back to New York and were a carpenter and made, did lofts in the.
Yeah. Well, that's what I did. That's actually after I went to Bennington.
You went into Bennington. That's right.
And then,
all right. I didn't have the timeline.
And then,
And you graduated.
I did graduate.
Ding, 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 ding.
I'm the only,
only
person
kid.
in my family that graduated from college, which is shameful. But both my
Not
kids
Jewish.
Graduated.
Right.
Damn it.
And one of them's
A word.
Fulbright.
Yes, scholar.
Mm-hmm. Whatever.
That's correct. I know. Go figure. So, I was going to college and I was never a very good carpenter, but I was good enough to, and you have to imagine.
You know, Jesus was also a carpenter. All right, go ahead.
You know, when I say I was remodeling lofts and tried
right, and
Soho, they're thinking about like hedge fund guys.
Right.
I was not doing that kind of work. I was doing it for artists back when you could get a 4,000 square foot loft for like $15,000.
Right. And there were like syringes on the ground. I mean, people don't realize.
I'm just doing simple stuff so that people could eat in their loft.
But you did have, you have the skill or had the skill, so you knew you could always work.
Yeah, I would do something.
Right. So you graduate. Did your parents come to graduation?
They did.
Both?
My dad was dead.
We didn't.
Yeah, we skipped that.
We skipped dead dad. Your dad, by the way, died at 59. Mm-hmm. The morning that the two of you were supposed to start rehearsals for Equus?
Correct. Yeah, it was.
And how old were you?
22.
I mean, here you're going to, who your father really is at this point. Mm-hmm. You finally, like, it's comes full circle, here you were a kid on the set and then here you are and you're going to work with your dad and he wakes up or doesn't, did he wake up?
He woke up dead. I'm not supposed to say that. Yeah. He died. I mean, in his sleep.
Yeah. All right, that's
he had
a good way to go.
Massive heart attack.
Right.
But, it's one of those things that, I mean, Tyne thinks that he died because he was scared that I would have a bit better career than he would. He was going to be jealous, so he just willed himself.
Really?
To the other side.
Right. Did you count his words as well?
I did not.
Who had more word count in Equus?
Oh, he had a lot more.
All right. So, okay, go ahead.
It was one of those moments where it seems like the timing of it seems like a TV movie or something.
Right.
Day,
I know. It's like that doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen. And it did.
Okay. Did you think it was a sign or that's devastating. Did you go do Equus?
I did.
You did?
Yes. I mean, this is.
Who took his part? Were you like, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you?
No. Kevin McCarthy, who was a drunk and didn't know his words.
Right.
And
now
he's.
The
guy that I know.
Isn't he the minority leader?
No, not that guy. Oh, that guy. Jeez. How about all these Irish guys?
I know.
My people are letting
us down.
What is
going on? You were the boat. You were like
Jesus
the liberals.
Christ. I know.
All right. So.
Anyway. But it's one of those things that I wonder how my life would have turned out, because if I had any safety net at all in my life, it was my dad.
Right.
And when he died, that net was gone.
Right.
And I had to figure out how to you know, sink or swim.
Right.
And so it was scary.
Do you think that's why you went back to college?
Well, I mean, I only had like another, year left.
Oh, okay.
And there was enough money in his estate to pay for that.
Right.
So I knew I could get through, but I knew that I had to eat.
Did you study acting at Bennington?
I did.
Who else was in your, anyone we would know?
Oh, gosh. I don't think so. I mean, there's been some people like Mitchell Lichtenstein, who's done some stuff, who was Roy Lichtenstein's son.
Wow.
And who else who's had a career? I don't really know. I think I'm sort of of my era. I think I'm sort of kind of it.
Do you ever go back to Putney?
I do go back
to
Putney.
You do?
Yes, I'm on the board of trustees.
Woo!
Yes, my daughter, the Fulbright scholar, went to Putney.
Wow.
Yes. And my girlfriend, that sounds, I mean, when you're my age.
Well, how about when you're a les and you have to go, my partner. Ugh, it's like, no, it's not.
You know what I'm going to call her? I call her my accomplice.
Your accomplice.
So that when we get, when we go to jail. We'll share the same plea bargain. My accomplice went to Putney.
Really?
Yes.
And you didn't know each other there?
We did not. I'm 10 years older. I'm robbing the cradle.
Wow. She's hot, by the way.
She's hot, I know. Jesus Christ. Whew. Anyway, sorry, I'm getting very warm.
I mean, she is.
I know, she's hot.
All right, you're hot, too.
And she looks like she's like 30.
I know, what the fuck?
I don't know, she does. Puts a lot of lotion on and stuff.
Yeah, I try to do that, too. It doesn't work. Okay, you graduate. And you are acting, or you're doing a little, and then you get Hill Street. You got a Hill Street Blues little
gig-y. Which was pure nepotism,
right? It was your wife, or your wife, your brother-in-law.
Yes, Tyne's husband George Brown was directing Hill Street Blues, and he said, "If you can get yourself out here, you can have this part." And all I remember is one line where I said, "Yeah, Bulgarians, Lieutenant." Yeah, Bulgarians, Lieutenant. That's all I remember.
But that was it?
No, I had some other line, like two fingernails on the left hand, you know, something like
were you freaked out that you were on a TV? First of all,
I was terrified.
First, why couldn't he fly you out?
Because you don't do that. You gotta, anyway.
He could have lent you the money or something.
Well, he lent me some money later. Paid him back to it.
Good. You better funk. I don't like him right now. All right. So anyway, so you go back.
I did that. And then, you know, I'm struggling around in New York and work in construction, and I get an audition for Diner.
Initially you didn't get the audition because you went to your agent and they said,
I'm too young.
Right. And she said, you're not right. Your agent.
Not
your agent.
And then
another nepotism.
And then Tyne knew Valerie Curtin, who was at that point married to Barry Levinson. She said, you should see my kid brother. Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah, Barry
Levinson.
And
so I went and saw Ellen Chenoweth, who was the casting director.
Yes.
And she said, you're not right for this. And I said, oh. And she said, but, you know, why don't you just read anyway? So I read for her and she went, okay, why don't you read for Barry? So I read for Barry. And he liked me, and I read about six more times, and eventually did a screen test, and the rest is.
Remember screen tests? Don't do them anymore, do they?
They don't do anything anymore.
I mean, take it.
People are in their closet with their fucking iPhone.
I know.
Doing auditions.
What the fuck? You know,
directors are afraid of human beings. They're afraid to be in the room with a human being. And I don't know how they can direct someone.
Also,
if they don't say,
you get the essence of the person when they walk in the room.
That's right. What if it's a life's too short situation?
Right. But it's like now, even when you go to audition, which you probably don't have to audition anymore, of course. But when you go to audition, it's like you're just going on tape somewhere else.
Yeah, you're in some right. You're with
you know?
Something that's like a step up from an iPhone.
Right.
I don't understand it.
It's horrible. And then my agent's always like, you know what? 12 of our clients got pilots on their iPhones. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm gigantic and I need to be in the room. Whatever. Okay, so then you get. First of all, you were so cute in Diner with your little black hair.
I was terrified.
You were?
Oh, terrified. Because the funny thing is, you know, growing up, when my family was together, my mother and father were always talking about Shakespeare and Ibsen and Shaw and Chekhov. Yes, all this stuff, and about great performances by Gielgud and Olivier and you know, and all this stuff. And it was really you know, sort of pretentious and erudite. But nobody, like, I literally got to New York City with two actors in my family,
right?
And didn't know you had to have a headshot. I was like, oh, you have to have
wait.
A headshot?
They didn't.
No, they don't tell me anything. So
I knew
nothing.
Yeah.
I knew nothing about the nuts and bolts of what you had to do to get a job as an actor. So
that was nice of them to communicate.
Consequently, nobody told me that things like when you're in a movie, you have to walk into a room and hit a mark, meaning you have to stand in this exact place, otherwise you're out of focus or you fuck up the lighting or whatever. So I was so – and I'd been in the theater where you have a lot more, you know, room to move around. So I felt so nervous that I was going to step over the red piece of tape that was on the floor.
Right.
And people would glare at me and look at their watches.
But you'd think you would be like, oh, I've been around actors before. I know how to behave. But you really were just frightened.
The thing is, I am really well suited to acting.
Right.
I have an overactive imagination. I can't sit still.
Right.
I'm fascinated by human beings and what makes them tick.
Yes.
I'm not so well suited to being an actor. I'm not like a crazy egomaniacal guy that needs attention.
Yeah, that's that is true about you.
And I don't.
I can't stand that in people. I can't.
I like it sometimes. It's very entertaining. But I don't. But I just am not. That's just.
No, you're not like that at all.
Don't forget to tune in next week to Just Kill Me Now.
Let's just kill me.
Oh. Don't forget to turn for part two on Just Kill Me.
No, it's not. It's
just Kill Me.
Now. No,
Judy Gold's Just Kill Me. Just Kill Me Now.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.